At this time, the Ventnor City Planning Board, October 12, 2022, meeting is now in session. This meeting is being held in accordance with due public notice thereof of the New Jersey State Sunshine Law. Notice of this meeting was advertised in the press and the Current, and a copy of same has been posted on the bulletin board in the municipal building. At this time, we'll rise and salute the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will our board administrator please call the roll?
Jay Cook.
Here.
Roman Zabi Hutch.
Here.
Lorraine Salata.
Here.
Dan Smith III.
Here.
Peter Tocco.
Here.
Tim Coop.
Here.
Greer Gaskell.
Here.
Wendy Bartlett.
Here.
Absent are Commissioner Landgraf, Commissioner Kriebel, Tom Halpin, Mike Wiesen, and Dan Smith and Don Sigling. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. At this time, we have a change in our agenda. Our solicitor will advise everyone about that.
Yeah, one of the applications on our agenda, Ventnor Plaza LLC, 5000 Wellington Avenue, which is block 304, lot 1, over in Ventnor Heights. If anyone's here for that application, that is going to be adjourned and heard at our October 24th meeting, 2022, 6:30 p.m. in this room. The applicant will not be required to republish or renotice. So I didn't want anyone here for that to have to sit here and only to hear it's been adjourned. So that will be on October 24th, and I believe, Jay, the minutes from the September 14th meeting, I believe Jim sent an email saying he wasn't able to complete those. We'll approve those next meeting.
So we're going to I'll make an announcement on that.
Okay.
So at this time, the minutes from the September 4th meeting are yet to be submitted, and they will be approved at the next meeting. So they will be carried forward to that time, along with the minutes of this meeting. At this time, we have adoption of resolutions. We have three resolutions this evening. Are there any changes or modifications to said resolutions? Hearing none, may I have a motion? Well, the resolutions are the following. P32-22. Amanda Rica, P33-22, 2022, Amy Benini, and P34-2022, JJCC, Longport LLC. At this time, may I have a motion and a second?
I'll make the motion.
To adopt resolutions. Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The resolutions are hereby adopted. This evening, we will be 1, 2, 3 applications this evening. The first one, that will be Mega C Isle LLC at 6506 Ventnor Avenue.
Chairman?
Yes.
I have to recuse myself from this application.
Okay. I'll let the record reflect that Peter Tocco is recusing himself and removing himself physically from the board for this application.
Good evening. Brian Callahan of the law firm Callahan & Thompson on behalf of the applicant. We're here tonight to get the crab that's on the wall approved. Rationale is Mr. Agnesino indicated that in his opinion that the crab constituted a sign under the definition of sign in the thing.
Before you continue, could you have someone that needs to be sworn?
I'll have Mr. Barnhart.
Well, let's get him sworn.
All right.
All right, John, just state your name and business address for the record. I'll get you sworn in.
John Barnhart, 400 North Oak Avenue, Atlantic City, New Jersey.
And please raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm the testimony you're about to give tonight will be the truth?
I do.
Okay.
Mr. Barnhart, you're a licensed engineer and a planner, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And your credentials are acceptable to this board?
Mr. Cook, just for the record, all jurisdictional requirements have been met. And a little bit of the quick, real quick background, Mr. Agnesino indicated it was a sign. We discussed it. We agreed that when you read the definition of sign in your ordinance, that it doesn't have to have lettering. It can be for advertisement purposes, destination purposes, location purposes. So we agreed to come before the board and ask for a sign variance. Previous background is, as you recall, this is the building that was Delaware Meat Market for a long period of time. They then sold it to Mr. Vasilikas. He had come before the board, had gotten permission to do certain things, did certain things, but didn't do other things. Project sat there stagnant for a couple years, sold it to Mr. Lynn at Mega Sushi. Mr. Lynn went back to Mr. Agnesino, finished up the permits, got the place opened up for the summer, we're up and operational, and we're here tonight for the crab. The original pictures that just show in there, the previous, he was qualified for 25 square feet. The portion, the Ocean Krot Seafood Boil sign is like 24.2 square feet. So the crab puts us up to about 45 square feet. I think our real rationale is if you drive past the place right now, if you're coming from Margate to Atlantic City, there's two big street trees in front of Virtua, which is next door, which would really almost block ever seeing the Ocean Krot Seafood Boil sign. Now, if you're coming from Atlantic City up, well, you can clearly see the crab, and the signage is, you know, still hidden a little bit. So we think that, and I'll let Mr. Barnhart go further, we think that the sign gives us good visibility, good destination, middle of the block, and it, you know, has no impact on anyone else. But Mr. Barnhart, let me have you go over it and walk them through a little bit from a planning perspective.
So I do have to say this is my first application for a crab. it's an interesting case because if you read your sign definition, it's relatively subjective as to what would be considered a sign and what would not. I look at this as a feature or an element, something to create interest on the property. It doesn't provide any information. I guess in theory, because it's a crab, it lets you know that there might be seafood inside the building. So that could be considered some information. But I think this is, from a planning perspective, I think this is a C2 type of application where the benefits of the deviation outweigh any potential detriments. The benefits being that it creates interest to a building. Do you want a crab on every building along the avenue? No. But you have a small seafood restaurant here. You have a very tastefully done sign that's less than 25 square feet. That's the actual sign itself that identifies the facility. And then you add this what I'm calling an architectural element to the face of the building to just create some interest, to create a different aesthetic, something that people will remember when they drive by it. As Mr. Callahan said today, it might even be people might start saying, "Hey, meet me at the crab." So we believe that it is a C2 type of application where the benefits of the deviation outweigh any potential detriments. We believe that it does advance a specific purpose of zoning by creating a desirable visual environment through creative design techniques. It is something unique to the community. You see it here and there at other seafood restaurants, but I don't know if there's anything like that in Ventnor at the moment other than at this location. And with regard to the negative criteria, is there a substantial detriment to the public good? I would argue there is not. This is a commercial corridor. This is a location that you would expect signage and other elements like this to exist. And the second prong of the negative criteria, is there any substantial detriment to the zone plan or the zoning ordinance? I would argue as a planner that this is not a sign. We've already lost that argument in front of your zoning board official, but this is as far from a sign as you can get, in my opinion. I've reviewed a lot of different sign ordinances, and most sign ordinances require some kind of identifier by way of some type of language or wording or numbers, something on it to actually make it be considered a sign. So for all those reasons, we believe that the negative criteria and the positive criteria are established, and there really is there's no negative with an application like this.
Something overwhelms the building either, right?
It does not, and it's placed slightly separately from the actual sign, the sign that has words on it. It just creates interest to the front of the building's architecture.
All
I don't have any other questions, Mr. Barnhart, I would open up to the board.
Members, any questions? Are you complete?
We're complete.
I'd like to open up to the public.
Need Mr. McLaurin to report?
We're gonna do that.
Sure.
We're gonna do that. Is there anyone in the public who would like to make comment on this particular application? Hearing or seeing none, the public portion is now closed. Mr. Roger, could you be sworn, please?
Yeah, Mr. McLaurin, do you swear affirm the testimony you're about to give tonight will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
And could you read into the record, your report, please, on this application?
Sure, it's a brief report, but thank you, Board Chairman. Board members, the report is based on the application of Megu Seow LLC, 6506 Ventnor Avenue, Block 71, Lot 17. C variance for a sign. Again, as Mr. Callahan has outlined in his testimony and John, they need a sign variance for the size, whereas the permitted sign size is 13.5 square feet. They had a variance to allow 25 square feet, and 24.2 was approved as a zoning permit, and the overall sign, including Mr. Crabb himself, is 45 square feet. Again, I agree with Mr. Agnesino that the crab is part of the sign. However, the overall sign size is probably substantially less than what was there before as a Delaware meat market. And there's a big Dietz and Watson signature sign there, too. And I agree with John, it is a C2 criteria, so you have to, the benefits outweigh the detriments. I used to work in a seafood restaurant, too, and we had a giant fisherman. So I see the attraction, the association with a crab and a seafood. In my opinion, it meets the intent of the business, and the trees blocking the site, again, it's not as large as what the sign was there before. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan, do you concur with, you agree with that report?
We do.
Okay. Do you have anything further you wish to add?
We just think, once again, as Barnhart said, it's a nice addition. You have a brand new business in town. You're trying to make it succeed. To succeed through not only the summer months, but the winter months. Mr. Lynn's got a good neighboring vendor at the Mega Sushi. He did the Wayne's Avenue project, which is finishing up, and now this project. So he's been a good neighbor, running a good operation. And if you've been into the place, it does nice for either sit down or take out. So I think, once again, it's a good addition. And I unfortunately, I know I made it later, but I think people will say, beach at the crab, let's go. It's a place to go. I mean, who's going to say, I'll beach at the ocean crop seafood boil? At least not me. So I think it's a good project that has no harm to anyone.
Okay. Are you complete?
That's it.
You're complete. Okay, board members, do you have any questions of the applicant or of our professionals? Well then, if there are no discussion, if not, we'll go right to vote. And Leo, could you form an affirmative position for a resolution, please?
Yes.
A vote.
Yeah, someone needs to make a motion to grant the C, and a second to grant the C variance for the side, the area of the sign, 13.5 square feet allowed. Prior approval allowed a 25-foot square foot sign, and this one is 45 square feet. So that's the variance. The conditions will just be anything in Mr. McLaren's report, unless otherwise addressed on the record, and that's it.
One question. That sign is lit, correct?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. There is lighting on it.
There is lighting above the sign. LED light.
Is it inside or?
No, it's above the sign. It illuminates.
I think it lights down, right?
Yeah,
right.
Down,
the sign
down
itself light. Is not lit.
Right. Yeah, there's no internal illumination. I think there is something above it.
There's an LED fixture above it.
Right.
Okay. That's not changing.
The light's up there.
Pardon me?
That's not changing, correct?
No.
Okay.
Okay. You heard the resolution? You had the resolution. Do I have a motion and a second, please?
I make the motion.
Second. I will have a roll call vote. Please state your reasons.
Jay Cook.
I'm going to vote in favor of the application. Having looked at the property today and so on, the crab is proportional with the building, and actually looks pretty good there, to be honest with you. And it also, with our businesses, we've done logos, we've approved logos for various businesses. We've done other things to help them be identifiable. And one of the things that I'd like to see go is, if it's not onerous to the city, then assist the business where we can with exposure and so on, to make it successful. And that's part of the what we need to do here and keep the merchants going. But from a zoning standpoint, the benefits definitely with the visual effects outweigh the negatives in the whole thing. And it's a very pleasing and it's proportional. So I see no detrimental effects to the application at all. I vote yes.
Roman Zabihatch?
I also vote yes. I view the craft as a artistic addition to the building. I don't really look at it as a sign, and get your attention, so yes.
Lorraine Salata?
I'll vote in favor of it. When you drive down Ventnor Avenue and at some of the business districts, everything sometimes tends to blend together. So, because they're small shops, they don't have a lot of signage. But I think this makes it pops and it gives the storefront some identity. So I'm fine with it.
Dan Smith III.
I'll also vote in favor of the application. I agree to what the chairman said, to help businesses where we can. And it kind of creates an identity for the business, and they can play off that and hopefully be successful. We gave a variance to Santucci's for their logo in the front there, and I don't see any big difference between the two. It's an identity situation. I'm in favor.
Tim Coop.
I'm also going to vote in favor. One person's sign is another person's piece of artwork. It's quirky, it's eye-catching. I appreciate it.
Greer Gaskell.
I vote yes. I believe there's no detriment to the vision spot. And I can tell you what the range is.
Wendy Bartlett.
I'll also vote in favor of it. I like Roman's point about it being an artistic addition to the building.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. next application is that of Aaron Gottfried, 25 North Newark Avenue. And let the record reflect that Mr. Toko and Mr. Nell have joined the board. And he is back. Taco has joined the board, and he is now sitting and will be for the next year for the next year. Now, Peter, you'll have to speak up on this application.
Good evening, Brian Callahan again on behalf of Karen Gottfried, 25 Newark Avenue, Block 127, Lot 8. Just for the record, all jurisdictional requirements have been met. The application before you tonight is a minor subdivision.
Before you start, do you have swearing to do?
Well, I'll swear everybody.
Let's get everybody sworn in.
I have Pete Weiss, Karen Gottfried, and John Arnold.
All right, why don't we go down the line, just state your name, business address. I can swear all three in together after you do that.
All right. My name's Karen Gottfried. I live at 25 North Newark Avenue.
Let's hold it down.
Peter Weiss, 3080 East Soquest Avenue, Northfield.
Can each please raise your right hand? Do each swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give tonight will be the truth? Thank you.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Weiss is a licensed architect, has appeared before the board before, his credentials are acceptable. Mr. Barnhart is a licensed planner and engineer, he's appeared before the board before, and his credentials are acceptable. And we're going to go start with the preamble at this point in time. So Roger, could you before you start, give your report, please?
Sure. Thank you, Board Chairman, Board members. The report is based on the application of Karen Gottfried, 25 North Avenue, North Newark Avenue, Block 127, Lot 8, seeking C variances in association with a minor subdivision. It's located within the R7 single-family zoning residential zone. Preliminary firm zone elevation 9. Substantial benefit variance. Materials reviewed on bottom of page 1. Continued on page 2. The plans reviewed and received. There's two plans. One is a minor subdivision plan, which you all have, variance plan, and Peter Weiss's architectural plans for the Gottfried residence. Project description is as follows. The applicant is proposing to subdivide an existing conforming lot with an existing single-family dwelling in the R7 single-family zoning district and to create two non-conforming lots for single-family. The existing dwelling will remain and the vacant portion of the tract will be developed. The subdivision creates several of the variances, including lot areas and widths. A summary is provided below. The legend indicates the zoning chart on page 2, continued on page 3, and highlighted throughout the zoning chart are the variances identified, and I'm in complete agreement with the variance plan provided by the engineer and planner. So the variances are as follows. One is lot area, proposed lot A, whereas 2,000 square feet is a minimum lot area for each lot. 3,750 square feet exists, so this is actually an oversized lot, and 1,875 square feet is proposed for each lot. So that's for lot A and lot B, there's two variances there. Lot width, 32 linear feet is the minimum lot width, 60 feet exists, and 30 feet is proposed. So it's a 2-foot variance per lot, so the two variances for lot width. Side yard setback, lot A, whereas the minimum side yard setback for detached single family dwellings is 4 feet, 21.9 feet exists, and 0 feet is proposed. Again, this is on the right side facing the property on the remaining lot A. Rear yard setback for the principal building, lot B, whereas 12 feet is a minimum rear yard setback for detached single family dwellings, and 10 feet is proposed for the proposed dwelling on lot D. Lot coverage, whereas 75% is the maximum lot coverage permitted within the R7 zoning district, 73.9 feet, 96% exists, and 82.4% is proposed. Again, naturally, if you reduce all the landscaping and make that lot smaller, that percentage goes up higher. Landscape coverage total, inversely of the lot coverage, if you have an increase in lot coverage, you have a decrease in landscape coverage. So they need a variance for that. The waivers, no waivers have been requested. A couple comments. The preservation of the existing structure in the subdivision is creating the side yard setback variances. The proposed lot widths are acceptable for attached single family dwellings, but does not comply with detached single family dwellings in the R7 zone. I believe they're going to give a demonstration today. If the proposed dwelling was attached to the garage by ordinance, that would be acceptable. But since the existing house is staying, I think that the board may agree or may disagree that that is the way to go as presented. The variances required for proposed lot B or lot width, lot area, and rear yard setback. Additional height is permitted for lot B due to the garage parking below the structure. All mechanical equipment shall be located at or above the finished floor. All provisions of the Title Recordation Law and NJSA 46:26B-1 shall be met. The grass governor strip with seed trees shall be incorporated into the plans. And I'm not going to go through all the minor subdivision requirements. Again, most of those requirements have been satisfied or will be satisfied based on what is presented tonight and agreed upon. So any recommendations would be satisfaction of the C2 criteria and any revisions that the board requests shall be made, and care shall be taken to try and preserve any existing mature trees.
and that's all I have. Are you congruent with that report?
Well, we've read it also. Yes, we'd like to, we'll go forward.
All right.
Once again, Brian Callahan of the law firm Callahan Thompson. Just for the record, all jurisdictional requirements have been met. I'd like to give a little brief history of the property so that the board understands how we got here. I brought my 1938 Atlas with me. In 1938, the house that exists there now was existing. The vacant lot that was existing there now was existing. 1942, People's Bank foreclosed against the Hand family in the middle of the war for $250 they paid them to avoid foreclosure. 1944, the bank sells it to the Goldberg family. The Goldberg family from 1944 through 2000 owned the property. 2000, they sell it to Miss Gottfried. She's lived there from 2000 to the present time. The city at one point in time, unbeknownst, consolidated the lots and turned them into a 60-foot lot. Now, one of the issues that we raise is that in your municipal land use ordinance, it talks about prior existing lots of record. And it says that you need some criteria. One of them, that the prior existing lot cannot be more than 10% of what the requirement is. In this case, 2,000 feet is the requirement, 1,875 is what we have, so we would meet that criteria. The ordinance also says that the lot, a vacant lot, cannot be contiguous to another vacant lot in the same ownership. We are not. We are a vacant lot that was contiguous to a house on the other side of the property. So we would meet that criteria. The third criteria was that the new house to be constructed would have to meet all of the setbacks. Now, my research was done after Mr. Weiss prepared the plans, so as you can see, I do need a rear yard setback. I'd ask Mr. Weiss that if the board agrees with my definitions, that can we chop 2 feet off? The answer was yes. Now, let me put the whole thing on the record. The reason I believe that the city consolidated, even though I couldn't find the ration when it happened, is at some point in time between 1944 and 2000, the Goldbergs built the shed which encroached onto the vacant lot. And I think that triggered someone in the city saying, okay, now that they've actually built something on that vacant lot, even though it's a little shed, that they consolidated it. As part of our application, we're removing it. But I just wanted to give you that history to show, from an equitable point of view, the lot has existed from my records, 1938 to the present, and would meet your criteria for a pre-existing non-conforming lot. All right, that's step one. Step two, I'd like Ms. Godfrey to come up and give you a little idea of why we're doing this. Because as Mr. McLaurin had indicated, if I built a side-by-side attached property, and that is a permitted use in the R7 district, well, conditional. You need a 12, 12, 7, and 7. Unfortunately, or depending on how you look at it, unfortunately or fortunately, Ms. Gottfried is an English teacher at Atlantic City High School and doesn't have the wherewithal to knock down her existing house, move out of it, build $800,000 or $900,000 worth of two houses, move back into one with her mother who's 90, and then sell the other one. So we didn't have the wherewithal to handle that. So that's why we're here to do that. So Karen, want to get up? Let me just, once again, you're living at the house?
Yes.
You've owned it since 2000?
Yes.
School teacher in Atlantic City?
Yes.
What do you teach?
I teach English.
Give them a little idea of why we're doing this project, why we're here.
Hey, we're here. Good evening, everyone. So I am a high school English teacher, and it's really important. Not only is that my job there, but I'm also taking care of my mom. And unfortunately, she can't go up and down steps. She can't get out of the house. So for her to continue a good quality of life, which she deserves, the elevator and the handicapped bathroom and having a brand new home for my mom, a small, tiny home where she can get her independence back and her quality of life, would be something that would be very nice. My family does live on the next street over, and they do help me with my mom. I love Ventnor. I've been here, I bought my house Cinco de Mayo in 2000, and I'm a part of the community. I patronize all the stores. I see my students here, and they're happy to see me. I see them growing. there's not any neighbor that I can't stop and have a cup of coffee, you know, on that street. I want to stay in Ventnor. I want to live there. I don't know where else I would want to live and where I would want to go. And financially also I would live in the home with my mom, and then I would sell that home, I mean live there while it's being built, and then sell that home so I can pay for that, for the home that I'm building. That's all that I could really afford, is something that's small, tiny, new, and good for my mom, and also for my future too. You know, when I get older, I'm going to need those amenities as well.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Why don't I jump in, and why don't you describe what the house is going to look like and walk them through it? Designs, size, shapes.
Okay, so what we're proposing is...
Wait a minute, let me ask one quick question. Mm-hmm. Lorraine, can you hear him?
I can, but he could still speak up a little bit.
Okay. See, I got to tilt it. Yeah. Now, what we're proposing is a small two-story house with three bedrooms. The house, the living space would be about 1,760 square feet, and that would be built above a ground floor, which would contain the garage entry storage. The first floor is the living space, the powder room, a utility room, and second floor is three bedrooms, two baths, so that's pretty simple. We were going to have an elevator that would connect, you know, the garage level up to the upper two floors, so there'd be easy access from floor to floor. The building itself conforms with all the zoning requirements except for the rear yard setback, where we're requesting 10 feet where 12 is required. The exterior is basically a modern look with a monoslope roof, fiber cement siding, both horizontal and board and batten, and the railings would be stainless steel cable rails. And that's it.
We're going to have plenty of landscaping, governor strip?
Yes. Well, we certainly conform with the, as I said, all the requirements. So there's plenty of landscaping, and the lot coverage is under what's permitted.
How many parking places?
Two. So there's one in the garage, one in front of the garage.
And there's two on the remaining lot? So we have adequate parking for both houses?
Yes. Parking is not an issue.
Is the building FEMA compliant? The new building?
Well, it's elevated, yeah, sure.
Okay,
yes.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
All mechanicals will be FEMA compliant and everything else?
Yes.
Any other questions for Mr. Weiss before I call Mr. Barnhart? Hearing none. Mr. Barnhart? John, you want to walk me through the existing site and then compare it to what we're intending to do with removing the encroachment and what will be left on A and then B, so we have a good understanding of the variance relief that we need for both properties?
Sure. As Mr. Callahan already described, the subject site is a lot that has 60 feet of frontage along Newark Avenue, and it has a depth of 62 and a half feet, and it currently exists as one parcel. On the site currently is the home that you see here to the left on the plan, with one minor deviation, is that there is a portion of a shed that actually projects beyond this existing wall line toward the area of what is proposed to be the second half of the application. The proposal is to subdivide the lot into two equal parts, each one would be 30 feet in width, obviously a depth of 62 and a half feet. For the purpose of building one additional B-simple single-family detached structure. This is an interesting case because we're in an R7 zoning district, and when you look at this, you don't really dig into the R7 standards and what's permitted and what's not. You would look at this and you would say, well, geez, they're proposing to subdivide existing parcel that's compliant into two parcels that are now both undersized as to their area. Why would we approve something like that? But when you look R7 standards, the R7 standards actually permit a two-unit structure on 60-foot-wide lots. So the standards in the R7 that are permitted use allow two individual units to be developed on a lot the exact size of what this parcel actually tipped at today.
No.
Okay. So the case to this evening is not really a discussion of density or too many houses on the property. The case of, in my opinion, from a planning perspective, is the case of what's better for the block. All right. Is it better for the block to tear everything down and to develop a larger building that's a attached pair of units with a party wall down the middle? Or is it a better planning alternative to keep the plain structure that's there today, to develop another structure that is similarly sized with regard to its width and height and depth and number of stories to the balance of the block? Again, I'm going to say it a number of times because it's important. This is not a discussion of density. Our client would allow to build two homes on this property. It's a matter of the style of structure. Is it a detached or is it an attached? You did hear our client from Mr. Callahan and discuss the issue of finances of why she's going this one to go this direction. That's not my case. That is not, as you know, that is not necessarily something that the zoning board considers. What I'm looking at from a planning perspective is what is the most appropriate way to develop this parcel. If I had a bunch of 60-foot lots with side-by-side units on them, two units per lot on a 60-foot lot, and they're attached units, I would say that's the direction we should be going. But if you look at this block from one end to the other, except for this one condo on the corner to the north, if you look at this block, it's lots that are 30, 38, I think there are two other 60s. We're flanked a 30-foot lot on either side of us. But all of those structures are this same style of structure that currently exists on this lot. They are one- or two-story buildings. They are quaintly sized. They are not massive structures. It's hard to tell. Some of them may have had a ground floor apartment at some point, but in large, they all look like very modestly sized single-family homes. This project, as proposed, would develop exactly that. It would develop a new, modestly sized single-family home for our client and to preserve an existing single-family home on the subject parcel. So when you look at how this application would advance the purposes of zoning, I think this is clearly a PD type of application where the benefits of the deviation outweigh the detriments. The benefits are that we are, while permitted to have this number of units, we've made a decision to create a consistency in the development pattern, to create homes that front on Newark Avenue that are more appropriate than a single structure that has a party wall down the middle that creates two larger side-by-side attached units. With the application, there are a couple of deviations, and in large, the deviations are essentially existing non-conforming to go with the existing house. That is, the family room structure would be essentially a party wall line along the proposed subdivision line, where the existing non-conforming with regard to the rear yard of that structure and the side yard of that structure. With regard to the new home, there's a new parcel. That site will meet all requirements but for the rear yard setback. The idea there was just to gain a little bit of additional room in the building, but as Mr. Callahan mentioned, you heard him mention that Peter took a look at that. If that's a real concern of the board, I think that a 10-foot rear setback is more than adequate and very consistent in the neighborhood. You can see patch drive is behind us, directly on the line. Obviously, the existing home is close to the line. The home next to us is close to the rear line. So a 10-foot stop rear setback, we think, is very appropriate. So this is one of those projects where, try not to look at any one individual item. Try to look at whether this project is better for this block than what I would say a buy-right project would be. The buy-right project would be a 7-foot side yard, 7-foot side yard, 12-foot front yard, 12-foot rear yard, a building that is pushing 50 feet wide, two stories, 2.5 stories, party wall down the middle, two driveways, and you need to get a number of vendors built within the community. This project proposes essentially greater overall sidewalks. This area in the rear that is against the property line, it's only one story, it's low to the ground, it really does not have any major impact or impact to air-like motion space. So our project has a 4-foot sidewalk, another 4-foot sidewalk, almost 9-foot sidewalk, and then 3-foot sidewalk. If you add those sidewalk setbacks up, that's actually greater overall side yard than you would be getting at the fire rate project. But that's a 7-foot side yard, 7-foot side yard, and nowhere like the space in the middle. So are there positive criteria that are against this application? I would say there absolutely is. I think that this is an application that promotes the general welfare because of the consistency of the development that's proposed with the size, scale, and layout of the structure that are proposed. I think that this application also creates a desirable visual environment by a nicely designed new home within the better housing stock being constructed on the property. And I think that a very important purpose of zoning that establishes it's something that you don't hear a lot here is the establishment of appropriate population densities. The reason that purpose is clearly advanced with this application is because we are committed to have 2 units on the property, but we've recognized that this method of achieving those 2 units is more appropriate for the location. So this is a population density that we think works very well with the block. With regard to the negative criteria, is there a substantial detriment to the zoning plan for the zoning ordinance? Well, I think I talked about the zoning plan already. The R7 permits 2 units on the lot. We're proposing 2 units on the lot. The R7 permits a bigger building than we proposed in total when you look at what is proposed as part of this project versus what the by right condition would allow. So for those reasons, we believe that the zone plan or zoning ordinance is certainly not prepared. And with regard to the second prong of the negative criteria, is there a substantial detriment to the public good? With an application like this, there's going to be an impact to the neighborhood, 100%. We're out of the unit. It's not there now. But what you have to weigh is the impact of our project versus that 2-unit project that you're allowed to build without variances. Is the impact any different? And I would argue that it's not. In fact, it's probably less with what we proposed. A by right application would permit much larger structures. You're going to get to probably a 2.5-story building. You're going to have more bedrooms. And you can see we're talking about a 3-bedroom new home. And there's also
3 bedrooms, 1.5
bedrooms. Side by side unit here. I do a lot of them. You know that. You've seen a lot of them. There are going to be 4 or 5 bedrooms a piece if we develop the size of the property. And you can use all the projects like that. So we believe that the negative criteria is clearly established. We believe the positive criteria is established as well. And for those reasons, we think that all the variances can be given.
Even from the positive, we're going to be completely FEMA compliant, not only the building, but all mechanicals and everything else, which will be a plus for the new house.
In the new structure.
Right. Correct. I don't have any other questions, and Mr. Barnhart, I will once again open up to the board.
Couple clarifications. One is you do have to do some demolition prior to the subdivision.
That's correct. Take down the shed.
Okay.
Yes.
So that has to be done before it's filed. And the second clarification is attached single family is actually not a permitted use, it's a conditional use. They would meet the conditions almost completely in this application.
And let me just throw out one second. We looked at it as an alternative method whether we could slide the existing house over and attach it to what's on the property line right now. But when you look at your ordinance, it really talks about that they want to see a building that is similar in material, similar in style and everything else. So by taking Pete's house, sliding it over and attaching it to what's existing, we didn't think would meet the quality of the ordinance the way it was set out in doing it. So that's why we bypassed that alternative planning solution.
Also, if you did that, you're kind of hamstrung in the next owner of that property. That
correct.
They would have to come back in front of the board.
Correct.
They would have to change that.
Right.
Right.
In here, you're making modifications, removing the shed. You have on your plan on the line is what is the construction of that wall that's on the line?
don't really know. So it could be masonry, but if it isn't, it would pretty much have to be masonry, you know, put back to maintain the fire ratings and that kind of thing.
Is it going to be masonry or not masonry?
Yeah.
It will be masonry?
Yeah.
So it would be fire rated?
Yes.
Okay. How about the back wall? What is that? What is that? What is that? Eight-tenths of 8.4 feet from the line?
Well, that's existing, so I don't know that that really matters, but I don't really know how it's constructed now.
Okay.
You know, it's got siding over it. I don't know what's under
all
the siding.
All I'm saying is it would have to meet the building criteria, whatever criteria is required for, that's it. Unless it's for fire coating or anything else, if it's required. I don't know if it's required.
No.
So it's up to you. But, so that'll be it. Thank you.
Yes.
Now, are you amending your application to make the rear yard 12 feet?
Well, that's why we asked the question, to hear it back from the board. Whether that 2 feet is going to make a difference to the board members in doing it.
Well,
I mean, it's a small house to begin with, and we had an elevator in it. That's why we did it originally with the 10-foot setback. If the board absolutely thinks that it requires a 12-foot setback, we can adjust.
I thought you stated that you said that it had to have no variances for in there to comply.
Well, that's if you were buying my argument that I am a prior existing non-conforming lot, and therefore I could just go ahead and build the house with a 12, 12, 4, and 4 because I'm less than 10%. So if you're buying that argument, then the answer would be yes, I would move the setback back to a 12-foot setback, and the lot, you would subdivide the lot, and it would just be, you would create back the vacant lot that was there with me removing the shed.
I don't think we can buy your argument unless you apply for it.
I would agree with his argument on that.
Okay, well,
I just read the ordinance, not to cut you off.
Let's go ahead.
They can come in here with that subdivision, not show anything on there, and get a zoning permit with that 0 or 12-foot setback in the rear. So they're asking for a 2-foot variance for the rear yard. That's the only variance they need for.
Well, then the answer to your question, Mr. Cook, it would be that I would amend the application to do it one of two ways. Vote number one would be the application would be amended to show a 12-foot rear yard setback, and we would ask that the board's vote to say whether or not they believe that we are a prior existing non-conforming lot of record, and the subdivision, you know, can re-subdivide the lot to create the 30-foot lot. If you disagree with that, if you vote no on that, then we're asking for the subdivision plan as presented today. And then once again, if you tell me that you're in favor of that new subdivision plan as exists today, but for the rear yard setback, then we can do it that way also.
What's the better way to do it? First way.
Well, why don't we hear from, I think we should hear from the public at some point. Is your argument a better argument if the city hadn't merged the lots at some point?
Well, yeah, and unfortunately I couldn't find out when they merged the lots.
Right.
Because fortunately or unfortunately, the Goldberg family owned it for 56 years. So I'm guessing sometime during those 56 years, they built a shed for extra storage, family, people's grandkids, whoever knows what.
On the lot line.
And then I'm guessing that somebody in the city recognized that and then said, okay, you own both lots, therefore we're going to merge it and give you one tax bill.
So when Ms. Godfrey purchased in 2000, she purchased one lot, not two.
Right, she purchased the entire 60-foot.
So it's always been one lot for her current owner?
For her time, yes,
thanks.
It's been one lot. So it was only when she came to me and did it, and we had the plans and everything else, that I did the research, take a look at the tax map, and as I said, my 1938 Atlas showed it as the house was already on the lot that she owns, and the vacant lot was already next door to it, listed as a vacant lot with a separate address. So that's what then made me take a look at it. I sent the letter to Leo and Roger back in middle of August to say I'm going to make this argument tonight, and I reiterated it today to say I was going to make the argument tonight that but for the shed on the property and the city consolidating at some point in time in the past, you know, that lot has always existed from 1938 to the present time, and that we can comply with the requirements of Bureau of Land Use with the 10%, no variances, and we're not next to a vacant lot.
So when the property was sold prior, you talked about a number of transfers during the Second World War, okay? And one of them was a foreclosure. Was it always one owner?
Well, I couldn't tell you what the hands, according to the deed of record, the hands owned both. So they owned the house and the vacant lot that got foreclosed. And the bank gave them $250. And then the bank sold the house and the lot to the Goldberg family.
Okay. So, all right. So was there ever a garage there? It looks like you got this concrete driveway.
Answer to your question is, me personally, and this is just an assumption, I believe that what is now the family room was a garage at one point in time.
Yeah, I think so.
And
maybe we can cut
that. From looking at it on the line, I think that the neighbors, that the Goldbergs converted the garage to a family room, and because the garage had all the crap in it that a normal garage has, they built the shed to put all the stuff in the garage into the shed.
May I make a suggestion?
Yes, sir.
That I think we go for a vote, initial vote on proposal is with the 10-foot setback, and it's a pre-existing lot. I think that's the way we should do that first.
Okay.
Confusing.
So go through that, just so you understand. Or do you want to create a resolution?
We'll create a resolution for it.
Okay. So, hear from the public?
We have public first, right?
Right, we have to open it to the public.
We have other things.
Go ahead.
I'm a little confused, I'll admit it, but discarding the rear yard setback for a moment, okay?
Right.
You're still asking for side yard setback.
Not on the existing house, not on the new house. The new house does not need any, if I got rid of the rear yard setback on the new house that Peter designed, I do not need any variance relief.
Yeah, but the old house, what's the right side, right yard setback?
Existing over here.
They're all existing non-conformities. The house is there. Pre-exists. We're not.
No, the right side wouldn't have a non-conformity.
Right, but I don't need it. It's an existing non-conformity. I'm not changing it.
How could it be existing? There's a whole lot next to it.
Right yard setback is a variance, yes.
Say what?
For proposed lot A, where the house is sitting now,
yes.
The right yard setback becomes a variance.
Yes.
Right.
That's my question. Okay. So there is a variance there.
On the existing house.
Right,
there's
nothing of a variance.
Right.
Ron, your answer to when the city took the tax bills
and
combined
them
in the early 70s.
Early 70s?
Yes. My family had some properties with lots side by side, and it suddenly had one tax bill with the lots totally combined.
Okay.
That's what Phil Robinson meant.
Got it.
Okay. I'm going to open it public at this time. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to speak on this application? Yes, sir. Please come forward. You'll state your name and be sworn, please.
Just state your name and address, and I'll get you sworn in.
The name's Jeffrey Miller, 18 North Wissahickon. I'm part of the block.
Okay. Can you spell your last name?
M-I-L-L-E-R.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Miller, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So my concern is we abut the eastern side of the Gottfried house. In other words, the plot that we're talking about, Mr. Callahan's talking about, we're going to build the house. We're on the Atlantic City side. My concern with respect to the Gottfrieds, I fully understand the need for having something that's handicap accessible to the nonagenarian mother, who I haven't seen in a few years, but I have happened to notice when I walk up to my third floor, which is my workspace, through the window, which overlooks their house, the mother been taken out in the ambulance, basically immobile or very little mobile. My concern is if they put a house right on my border, and God forbid the mother is cooking, happens to slip or fall, faints, whatever, and the house goes up in smoke, the prevailing land is from the west to the east, my house is gone. So that's my biggest concern with putting this house up on my border. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your comment, sir.
Yes, thank you. Good evening. My name is Dr. Maureen Gottfried. I live at 107 South Raspo Avenue in Ventnor, New Jersey. I have lived here for approximately 30 years. I serve the community.
Dr. Gottfried, do you swear affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I appreciate Al, Karen's neighbor, but I don't really think whether my mother cooks or not is his business, though she does not. And in addition, it is a property that would be for my sister and myself. As far as the family room, if you look at the house next door, it is the same cookie cutter house. It is the same cookie cutter house on Martindale, Richards. So that garage, somebody converted that to a family room. So it's a pretty standard house. I'm not really sure what else I'm supposed to say, but if there's any questions about the intention of the house or the property or whether or not, I'd be more than happy to answer any of those questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Yes.
So you and your sister are buying the house.
Buying the house. My sister owns the house and the property.
Okay.
I live in Los Barrow.
Oh, okay.
I'm the one with the beagle that always walks by when you're working at night.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. I'm Bradley Cassidy. I live at 4 North Newark Avenue.
Ms. Cassidy, do you swear affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Okay, thanks.
I've owned my house for 28 years. I've known Karen since she moved in, her and her mother. I've been to their house many times over the years. Her mom's 90. My mom's also 90. My house, though, has steps, so we had to move my mom to one of the buildings on the boardwalk because I only have a half a lot. I wouldn't be able to do what she's able to do for her mom, but I have no objection. I appreciate what she's trying to do to help her mom have a quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to make comment? Hearing or seeing no requests, the public portion. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Sharon Miller. I live on 18 North Wissahickon Avenue.
18 North?
Yes.
And please raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have an objection about Karen building her house, but I am very concerned about the variance. Is that we have a very, very pretty back garden. It's like our little oasis. And if they, I don't know why they can't just do the 10 feet, which is the normal thing. Why do you have to push it further towards my house? That's what my objection is. I mean, is 2 feet going to make a difference to their house? But it would make a huge difference in my life. So that is my objection, is the variance of the 10 feet to 12 feet. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
So I am sure you're all aware that they just tore down a house across the street from me on Rossboro Avenue and are obliterating my view, but it's not about me, it's about the good of the city, it's about the good of the properties, it's about what the houses look like.
All right, the public, is there anyone in the public who wishes to make more comment at this time? Yes, sir.
Not always.
Good evening.
Name and address, please.
Stephen Imperial, 20 North Wissahickon Avenue in Ventnor.
All right, Mr. Imperial, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
I have to start by saying, forgive the expression, a lot of mumbling goes on here for us that are not versed in this kind of stuff. I really have no idea what you were saying or what it even means. So it makes it difficult for, I think, anyone to comment intelligently on this subject, just a word or whatever. The side setback on, I don't know how, I could not comprehend, how close on the side will this new building be?
4 feet, sir.
4 feet.
Which is the required setback that the city requires.
4 feet.
That is the required setback.
And that's all you require, huh?
It's over the, it's required. Mm.
When I started, I wrote a letter, I sent a letter in, but I was told they don't read letters, you have to come and speak.
That's correct, sir.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. So what I wrote down, and I have to admit, I really don't fully understand these setbacks and regulations, why they exist. So what I wrote was what I thought were my sincere thoughts on the subject matter. I gain nothing, I lose nothing if this application is granted. I do live directly behind Karen in her current home. Doesn't matter to me what happens next door to her. But so I, what I started by saying is I do not understand, forgive me for reading, I do not understand the particulars of the plan to build on an, I thought was an undersized lot. Is it not? I need help. Is it or not?
It's a 30-foot lot with a 32 required.
So it's undersized.
But
okay.
There is also pre-existing other information which has been brought forward, sir.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't understand the particulars of a plan to build on an undersized lot. So I really can't comment on it. I don't really understand this stuff. What I do know is a neighbor on Wissahickon Avenue was denied a request to place an air conditioning unit in the space between his house and his neighbor's because of fire department access concerns. I don't know if the same concerns exist in the current situation or perhaps similar concerns anytime you attempt to squeeze in a structure on an undersized lot. Restrictions against this have been adopted and I can only assume predicated on public welfare concerns. The exception being sought ostensibly has to do with the needs of a senior citizen who has special needs and physical limitations which cannot be satisfied where she is currently residing in the structure's current configuration. I in no way want to discount this concern at all. But I note the current structure is directly behind my house and adjacent to on one side by a driveway and a part-time neighbor and the vacant lot in question on the other side. It would seem that the current situation has not presented any disturbing noise concerns to add to the senior's problems. I firmly believe that if this request to build under an undersized lot is granted and the senior is moved out of her insulated situation, she would be exposed to noise levels that she is not accustomed to, especially during the summer months when neighbors routinely enjoy getting together in the patio area in a house directly behind the desired new structure. I can foresee many noise complaints as a result. I would also believe that being exposed to unaccustomed noise levels would be detrimental to the senior's welfare and quality of life. In this regard, I also feel that placing houses close to each other increases the likelihood of interpersonal conflict and disharmony between neighbors for obvious reasons. I have observed this dynamic on my block on several occasions. These conflicts are difficult to resolve, hence the adage, good fences make good neighbors. I think the same thing can be said about ample space. Perhaps making accommodations in the current structure would be a better solution to meet the needs of the senior. Anyway, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to make comment? Hearing none and seeing no requests, the public portion of this application is now closed. Mr. Callahan, do you have any comments you wish to make?
Mr. Cook,
excuse me, in hearing Ms. Miller's comment indicating that what her concern was the 10-foot versus the 12-foot, talk to my client, Mr. Weiss, we would agree to reduce that, get rid of that variance, and have a 12-foot rear yard setback on the new home. So that other than the 30 by 62 and a half, there would be no other variance relief requested for the new home.
So noted. And you're amending your application, is that right?
We would be amending our application to do that, so that that variance on the rear yard setback of the new home would be eliminated.
Okay.
And that should address the Miller's concerns.
That is, your application has been so noted, and we move to 12-foot setback. Do you have any other comments?
Well, just as a final conclusion, I think Mr. Barnhart's presentation was very accurate in the sense of this is not a density requirement. Two units are permitted on the lot if they're attached. The question really comes down to population density. How do these houses fit into the rest of the neighborhood? Do we have other two units attached on the block, which we don't? What are the sizes of these bedroom counts? Do we have adequate parking and everything else? When you look at Mr. Weiss's plans, all of those things mesh. The fact that from 1938 to the present, it was always a vacant lot of record. That I think that when you take a look at this and see if is there a substantial detriment to the public good, a substantial detriment to the zoning plan. I don't think you can see any substantial detriments that the granting of this house on this lot would create. It's being built completely conforming. Front yards, side yards, rear yards, lot coverage, building coverage, grass, landscaping, governor strips, etc. So we think that once again, this is a project that can be approved. And the other thing, even though it's not a lot of times your concern, but from a population density, it keeps a person who lives in Ventnor, teaches Atlantic City High School, keeps them in Ventnor, does not force them out of the community to do something to take care of their mother. And as indicated, her sister who spoke in public lives a block away, which helps also. So once again, you have two people in the family who now have the ability to maintain a house, live in Ventnor, operate in Ventnor, and maintain their mother at the same time, which we think is not creating any substantial detriment to your zone plan or to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Okay. At this time, are there any questions of members of the board? Have any questions of our professionals, the applicant? If not, we're going to go right to a vote. So, Leo, could you phrase a resolution for the vote on this property?
Yes. It's someone needs to make a motion and a second. There's a minor subdivision to create the new lots. Mr. Callahan alluded to it. At one point, it appeared that there were two lots. At some point, they got merged, so a minor subdivision is needed to create the two new lots, and by doing so, there are certain variances. Proposed lot A, which is the lot where the existing home is, 2,000 square feet is required for lot area, and they're proposing 1,875 square feet. Same variance with respect to lot B, 2,000 square feet of lot area is required. They're proposing 1,875 square feet. The lot widths for proposed lot A and lot B, again, 32 feet is required. They have 30 feet in width for each one. And then a few variances remain with respect to the house on lot A that is going to remain existing. That's the side yard setback on lot A on the right side. Once the lot line's there, it's going to be at 0 feet where 4 feet's proposed. And then there's the lot coverage on that lot. They're at 82.4%, 75% is permitted, and then the total landscaping coverage, they're at 9.4%, where 25% is required. I'll note that the rear yard setback on the new house that they're proposing on lot B will meet the 12-foot requirement as amended during the course of the application, and if that shed apparently straddles where the lot line, the new lot line is going to go, they'll demolish that prior to perfecting the subdivision. And then I'll just note any other conditions set forth in Mr. McLaren's report, and then, you know, subject to the standard conditions that we put in every resolution.
The government strip and the street trees and so on.
They're going to comply with all that, yep.
All of that would be complied. Okay. We have a motion and a second, please.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second. Second. We'll have a roll call vote.
Jay Cook.
For this application, the deviations are less than 10%. There are many lots within the R7 district, which requires 32, but are 34.